Kia ora, this program is brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Wellington Access Radio, make your voice heard.
Cabal Irish, it's Andy Linton here. It's nice to be back with you. I was away in the UK, Ireland and France for 3 months and got back in August. And while it was good to be away, to be able to go away, it was also really nice to come home to New Zealand, to the fantastic winter weather we've been having. I was getting very hot when I was in France and it was just nice to come back and get into the rain and stuff. Anyway, thanks to all our sponsors and to our tech staff this week. Marion's here keeping me in order and some sort of thing. And those people, the sponsors and the technicians who look after us, make all this possible for us to do this. So earlier this week, I recorded an interview with a young man called Rennie Pearson. He's a young Kiwi who plays the wooden flute and other things like guitar and fiddle. And I've actually known him for 13 or 14 years. He started to come with his dad to the Irish session that ran in Kitty O'Shea's for many years until Kitty's eventually closed. He started doing that when he was in his early teens. His dad needed to bring him, of course, because he was underage, and his dad was very diligent and brought him, you know. So Rennie currently lives down in Golden Bay. And our connection was just a little bit on the flaky side. There's some bits of the audio where it was just slightly not as good quality as I'd like. But anyway, we had a nice chat. And but before I play the interview, we'll hear a song from his new album that's just about to come out. It's an old song from Tyrone called The Shady Woods of Trua. And then when we've heard the song, we'll just go straight into the interview. And then we'll catch up on the other side of that.
I've actually known him for 13 or 14 years. He started to come with his dad to the Irish session that ran years for many years, until Kitty's eventually closed. His dad needed to bring him, of course, because he was underage. His dad was very diligent and brought him. Rennie currently lives down in Golden Bay. I can't, a little bit on the flaky side, there's audio where it was just slightly good quality, not as good quality as I'd like, but anyway, with a light chat. But before I play the interview, we'll hear a song from an album that's just about to come out. It's an old song from Tyrone called The Shady Woods of Trua. And then when we heard the song, we'll just go straight into it, and then we'll catch up on the other side of that. Rennie Curran. a little bit on the, some bits of the audio where it was set. But anyway, good quality is chat. I played the interview. A song from. It's an old song from. I heard the song was. And other things like guitar. He started to come with. Just add to the. Bring him, of course. Establish. Really cut. A little bit on the. Some bits of the. It was set. But anyway. Chat. I played the interview. It's an old song from. I heard the song was. Bring him, of course.
Rene, what got you interested in playing the flute? What was the story?
Oh, yes. Well, so I've been listening to sort of traditional Irish and Scottish and Maritime Canadian music since I was a baby. Like, my parents, they had a few CDs of this kind of music. Altan was one, a fantastic Irish band from the from Donegal. Another one that I was, my all-time favorite was this guy called Chris Norman, who was a wooden flute player, and he was playing, he had these two CDs, which I am very embarrassed to say we'd actually ripped from the library. So they were on these, I remember they were on these yellow discs with a little Vivid, the name written in, and it was traditional flute music from Scotland and the Maritimes of Canada, and some music from Ireland as well, and also some old time American music. And there's just something about the rhythm and the enchanting melodies of this sort of Celtic music that it just grabbed me. And I went and saw him in Wellington when I was about 8 years old. He came and he performed in that little theater in the School of Music in Wellington there. And I was 8 years old, and I just remember I was just entranced for the entire show. And that night I said to Mum, I said, I want to learn how to play the flute. So she dug out her old high school silver flute, and which she hadn't played for years, and she taught me how to blow a note on it. And that was where it all kind of started.
Okay. So I mean, you turned up at the session with your dad, and the flute playing sort of got better and all that sort of thing, and you were there for, I mean, it was several years you kept doing that. And then I remember you obviously wanted to take that passion further, and you went off to study some more. So can you tell us about what happened there?
Yes. So actually the first thing that happened after I got into sort of started off with the silver flute is Dad actually found me a wooden flute teacher in Wellington, who lived just up the road from me, a man who, Andy, you know him very well, a man, Pat Higgins from Galway. And he really got me started in the Irish music. And it was through him that, I found my way to that Kitty O'Shea's session in Wellington. And as I got older, I went through some other teachers as well. I've always had a bit of a connection with this Chris Norman guy. I mean, he was the guy that really got me started, and he would come to New Zealand every year and run a workshop called Boxwood. And since I was about 11 or 12. I was went to that every year. And that was just a week of intensive traditional music workshops. So through that, I really got to know Chris quite well on a personal level. And we arranged that I would come and study with him on the east coast of Canada in his home in Nova Scotia. So that was really special. I was to come and sort of become his apprentice, as it were. And so I, at the age of 19, you know, I packed my bags and I went off to this faraway land, Nova Scotia, to a small fishing village called Lunenburg. And yeah, arrived and studied the flute there for a year with Chris. And there's a very special connection for those of you who don't know, between Nova Scotia, due to a period of history from around the 1750s to the 1850s, which is known as the Highland Clearances. And during this period, around 2/3 of the Highland population were evicted from their homes and forced out of their country, or at least forced out of where they lived at that moment, and they had to find elsewhere. So many of them emigrated overseas, and one of the most popular places to emigrate to was the east coast of Canada, because the fare was just a little bit cheaper than going over to America. And over there on Cape Breton Island, to this day, there is an extremely strong Highland population there, descendants of the Highlanders, and the Highland traditions there are still very, very strong. The music, the step dancing, the Gaelic language, all of that. It's like this little time capsule of Highland Scottish traditions.
Okay, that's
so that. Yeah.
So to be steeped into that would be be a lot more intense culturally than, you know, from the point of this music, than it being in New Zealand was.
Absolutely. Yeah. And having said that, you know, I wasn't living on Cape Breton Island. I was living outside of that in this town called Lunenburg. But that was very much the type of music that was around, as well as a lot of Irish music over there as well. Huge amount of Irish settlers in that area as well. Mm. But that was, yeah, that's one of the big connections between Nova Scotia and Scotland. And that was one of the reasons why it was so special to be over there and learning that traditional music. And yeah, that was my musical, my higher end musical education, as it were. Instead of going to university, I went to become the apprentice of a master flute player.
Well, that's an unusual career step, probably. Anyway, you know, even say for people in Ireland, some people will go off to do some of the courses at the universities there in trad music and stuff. But certainly somebody from this end of the world, there's not many people are doing that, are there?
Oh, no. Yeah. And it's probably a somewhat old-fashioned way of study. Like that would be more similar, for example, to how one might have done it in times gone past. You know, yeah, if you were if you were even in Ireland, if you were an Uilleann piper and you wanted to become a great Uilleann piper, you know, you would attach yourself to one of the great players of the time and you would kind of become their disciple. But that sort of method is not very common anymore. So it was quite nice to kind of do that. And I've had lots of other teachers as well over the years, but that was definitely, he's definitely been my primary influence.
Great. So you've been playing then. So that's, we're talking there about 7 or 8 years ago now, because you're what, 20, you told me 27, I think?
27, yes. Yeah, so yeah. About 8 years ago. Yeah.
7 or 8 years ago. Yeah. So, I mean, I know you've been, you'd spent some time, you know, you traveled a bit to Ireland and Scotland, but you've been back here in New Zealand for most of the time after that. I think that's probably fair, isn't it?
Yeah. So I was only over there for about a year and maybe a bit more, but mostly been based here in New Zealand, moving around, lived in Wellington, grew up in Wellington, lived in Golden Bay on and off quite a bit, just been living down in Dunedin for a bit as well. And
So the music has still been a big thing for you, and you know, we played a track earlier on, and it's from a new album. So tell us a little bit about that, and tell us about what you're doing to promote that new album.
Yeah, so I'm super proud, of this new CD that I've just finished. It's not quite out yet, but it's at the printers. It's called From Across the Seas, because that's where the music that I play is from, you know, and it's music, traditional music from Ireland, Scotland, and the Maritimes of Canada. And the album was heavily influenced by my live show, which I've been traveling around New Zealand performing for the last sort of year and a half with this solo show of tunes, songs and stories from all of those places. And the show is an eclectic mix of music along with storytelling, and I play a lot of different instruments. So I'm playing a lot, singing a lot of songs, playing a lot on the guitar, the wooden flute, the tin whistles, the bowron, and even a little bit of fiddle. So it's a show that I'm super proud of, and I'm really enjoying, you know, performing it to New Zealand audiences and sort of just being able to give this little taste of, you know, where actually so many of us here came from. So it's really special.
Mm-hmm. So tell us, you know, you're coming to Wellington next week to do two shows in Wellington. So do you want to tell us a little bit about that so people can take the chance to either book some tickets or I hope they book tickets in advance, or make sure at least they get out and come and see you play. So where's that going to be, and when, and what's the deal?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, so I've got this massive North Island tour coming up, and it's starting in Wellington, as you mentioned there, Andy. So I've got two dates at the Griffin Theatre, and that's the 7th and the 8th of October, so both 7:30 p.m. shows. So and alongside that, I've got it's actually 22 shows all up in the space of about a month. So it's a pretty full-on tour schedule, but all of those dates and all of the tickets can be found through my website, renniepearsonmusic.com. So head on over and grab yourself some tickets. And if you know anyone who might be interested in that kind of thing, please do let them know. And same goes, I'm all throughout the North Island. I'm definitely coming. I think I can confidently say I'm going to be going within 20 minutes drive of everywhere in the North Island.
Well, that's good planning out there. And some of those bigger venues than others, I suppose. And
some of them. I mean, it's mostly kind of medium-sized theatres, around 100-seater, kind of 50 to 100-seater places. So,
I just remind people too that the Griffin, for if you're not completely familiar where it is, it's in Wellington City itself, and it's on Guzney Street, isn't it? I think that's the street.
Yeah, I believe it is. Yeah, Guzney Street.
In fact, it's just across the road from where the Access Radio studio is, but there's no windows in the studio. So even if I was going to talk about looking out the window and seeing it, it wouldn't be true, you know? So there you go. I'm looking forward to trying to catch in at least one of those shows when you're here. I'm really pleased you've come on to talk to us about it. And we'll play another piece of music just to go out. Now, this piece of music is just an instrumental on the flute. And I think you've sort of multi-tracked, and there's some backing track and bits and pieces going on in there as well.
That's right, yeah.
And it's a Jenny's Welcome to Charlie. And of course, that's the Scottish sort of linkage there. And I think the Charlie they're talking about there isn't the one who's been in the press most recently. So we'll play a bit of that track. We'll not play it all because it's quite a long piece. Then we'll go back to the regular program after we've heard that heard that track. So, Renny, thanks very much for coming on.
Thank you so much, Andy. It's been a pleasure.
And we'll see you next week in Wellington. And people, make sure you get out to see him. Thanks for doing the interview with me.
Great, thank you, Andy, and see you guys at the shows.
I'm looking forward to catching one of those shows when you're here. I'm really excited about it. Pretty pleased you've come on. We'll play another piece of music just to go right. Now this piece of music is just an instrumental on the flute. And I think it's sort of multi-track, and there's some backing track, and some pieces going on in there as well. It's Jenny's Welcome to Charlie. Jenny's Welcome to, and of course that Charlie that's the Scottish sort of linkage there. I think the Charlie they're talking about there isn't the one that's been in the press most recently. So we'll play a bit of that track. We'll not play it all because it's quite a long piece. Then we'll go back to the regular program after we've heard that part of it. So Renny, thanks very much for coming on.
Thanks
for coming on.
Thank you so much. Thanks for being a pleasure.
And we'll see you next week, and people can mind and make sure you get out to see him. Thanks for being
great. Thank you.
Doing an interview with
Andy, and see you guys at the shows.
So there you go.
You know,
so to catch, I'm looking forward to catching one at least one of those here. I'm really excited about it. welcome to Charlie. Jenny's welcome to Scrap Charlie. That's the Scrap Charlie. Sugar Link is there. There isn't the Charlie they're talking about. Most recently. Okay. That track was to a web, because it's quite a long piece. And I go back to there. We've heard that program after. So we're on a track. Heard that. Thank you for being a pleasure. I'll see you next week on people. Make sure you get it. Thanks for being with me.
Right, thank you. The MC by Andy and
so there you go. Clearly, you know. So, to catch, I'm looking forward to catching one. They're here. I'm really about it. Play another piece of music just to go.
So, that was part of Rene's flute track, Jenny's Welcome to Charlie. Do make sure that you get to see Rene when this coming weekend, and we'll put a link up for his website on our page so that you can get hold of tickets and see what it's all about. When I was last on, which was before I went away, of course, on my trip, I mentioned that elections were due in Northern Ireland for the Assembly at Stormont, and it looked like Sinn Féin were going to turn out to be the largest party, and that's exactly what happened. And so that meant, of course, that Michelle O'Neill, who's the leader of Sinn Féin in the north, should have been the first nationalist first minister for the Stormont Assembly. But the DUP refused to take part in the Assembly. And of course, their argument was that it was about the Northern Ireland Protocol, which is the complicated business that deals with how traffic in and out of the mainland UK and the north of Ireland should be dealt with as a result of Brexit. But I think there's also a little bit of pique there about Sinn Féin being the top dog in terms of the largest party in Northern Ireland. And I think over the summer up there, their summer, Sinn Féin have actually played a real blinder in terms of the politics. They've just kept saying, well, we're ready to go into government. We want to govern for all the people of Northern Ireland. We're not going to make any complaints about the DUP. We think they should join us in government. And they sound like the calm voice of reasonableness. And of course, that just makes the DUP even more angry about the whole thing. And as well as sort of being in that position of being the first government, first minister, God, it's complicated when you get in that many firsts, that there should have been. They've also been in the news quite recently when the new King Charles went across to Northern Ireland, and lo and behold, the two people he meets first at in the public forum at the Cathedral for the Remembrance Service are the former Speaker of the Assembly and Michelle O'Neill, who are both Sinn Féin people. And they were very civil, and he shook hands with them, and he invited Michelle O'Neill to his mother's funeral in London, and she said, of course I'll come. And I've all looked like sort of as though they were just very reasonable people who wanted to get on with things, and the DUP were sort of sulking in the corner and so on. Now, you couldn't really make that stuff up. You know, if you'd said 20 years ago, somebody from Sinn Féin would be standing waiting in the wings to meet the monarch and being invited to the funeral and all that sort of thing, you would have gone, no, that wouldn't happen. So the other pieces that are going on there in the puzzle, and I think it's fascinating watching there at the moment, is you've got figures coming out that are saying, and these are independent figures on Europe-based sort of, standard of living sort of things, that if you have to be poor, you'd be better off being poor in Ireland because you'd be 63% better off than being poor in the UK. Now, you know, that's a whole different view of the world. You know, it always used to be that Ireland were considered to be the poor neighbours of the UK, and now it's beginning to look like a bit the other way. And that's all before the shenanigans this week by Liz Truss in the British Parliament about the massive tax cuts for the rich and so on. So it's going to be very interesting seeing how that pans out and so on. And then last week you add to that the census data that has come out for the Northern Ireland census that says, for the first time since partition, there are now more Catholics than there are Protestants in Northern Ireland. There's a big chunk of people who are saying they don't identify either way. So it's not like it's a 50 over 50% Catholic and less of that Protestant and so on. And of course, you can't necessarily match religion to politics and say, well, this group would vote one way and this group would definitely vote the other. But the other interesting figures for me that came out of that sense is there were questions asked about, do you identify as British or Irish or British and Northern Irish or Northern Irish and Irish or some other thing? And the number of people who are identifying as only British is going down, and the number of people who are identifying as only Irish are going up. And then there's people who sort of say, well, I'm Northern Irish, I'm sort of something else. But there's definitely change happening there, and it feels like if you had a border poll today, there's no guarantee that people would say, yes, we want to change things. But if you were thinking about that in 10 years' time, well, maybe the answer would be different again. And if that trend continues, then I think people in the Republic are going to have to start thinking about, well, so what are we going to do when these people have a vote in the North and say they want to come and join us? And the Republic also has to have a referendum at the same time, and they have to say, yes, well, we'd like you to come and join us. And those are sort of interesting questions, I think. So put all that together with that summer of how politics have worked there. Because the DUP have not gone into the Assembly 6 months after they sort of refused to do that, the Secretary of State will call another election. And so he has actually said this week that they will call an election. The date apparently is somewhere towards the end of October, and the election itself might happen, you know, before Christmas, although they may put it off to the new year. But there's going to be another election there, and it's going to be interesting, and more than interesting, I think it's going to be fascinating to watch what change happens there. I think we're living in interesting times, at least as far as that's concerned, and watching what's going on in the UK and how it relates to Northern Ireland. So I think that's probably as much as we want to have a chat about. I want to have a chat about today. I'd like to thank Marion for again once more. She's putting her hands up and triumph and so on in the cup, and also to our sponsors. So, well, see you next time, and slán go fóill.
You've been listening to Capital Irish on Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM, thanks to the generosity of our sponsors. We couldn't be here without them. Our sponsors are Wellington Irish Trust, Susie and Peter McGuinness, and the Hutt Valley Irish Society. A very big thank you from all of us on the Capital Irish team.
That programme was brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard.
Thanks New Zealand On Air for funding accessmedia.nz.